31 Days of Halloween. We are covering the show Monsters, a horror anthology that ran from the late 80s to early 90s. There are 72 episodes in this bad boy, and we are covering all of them within this 31 days. Each day, 2 to 3 episodes a day. Today, we're covering 2 of them. I am joined with Cake Bitch.
Hey.
I am Cake Wolf, and we're going to kick right into it.
We're going to speed do this episode.
Yeah.
Speed do.
Episode 5 of Season 3, titled Outpost. This one aired October 28th of 1990. Its director is T.K. Hudson. Its writer is Michael Reeves. And our stars here, we only have 2. We got Juliet Mills and Tony Fields. So Juliet Mills, she's playing Cara Raymond, and she's going to visit this dude that's basically heading a mining institution that's put into play from a government agency that she works for called Hephaestus. Kind of appropriate because Hephaestus is named after the Greek god that was like a blacksmith and like made stuff. He was like a creator god for the other gods. He built them their weapons and such.
Did they treat him badly?
Probably.
Okay.
In the stories, they did. But, I mean, Hephaestus is the corporation that Kara is working for.
Yes.
And Hephaestus is based off of a Roman god by the name of Vulcan, which also is appropriate because Kara is displaying a lot of Vulcan aspects to her. She's a bit Spock in the way that she's just sort of detached emotionally. She is meant to be that way because that's sort of the way that Hephaestus breeds their individuals that they need to do these awful kind of dehumanizing things.
Spock's not dehumanized, though. He's part human, so it's more like Spock's father.
Sure. basically, what we have here is she's visiting Sebastian, who is a bioengineered experiment. In a way, there's a bunch of people that undergo this bioengineering. They're usually criminals or people that were close to death and were given a second chance by Hephaestus to work for the government and help to better mankind as a whole through servitude in these like mining institutions all throughout the galaxy.
But the catch is you have to give up your entire life.
Right. So you're giving up your life. They're basically bioengineering turning you into a bit of a cyborg. They're implanting all of these machines in your brain that kind of mess with your synapses and ruin who you were so that they can kind of shape you to be something different. And unfortunately, these harsh conditions of some of these planets, they alter the form of these people and make them pretty nasty. This guy, Sebastian, he has these, like, this crystalline stuff growing all over his body. And he's sort of looking like the Thing from the Fantastic Four, Ben Grimm.
Kind of
looks like that.
I was thinking the Hulk, but rockier. And yep. That would be...
That would be the Thing.
Yep.
Yep. So if you take the Thing and you put, like, a car antenna on the side of his head and attach that car antenna to like a remote control, you pretty much you television remote control, you pretty much got this dude. He looks kind of craggy and little bits of
red
machine sticking out of him. Yeah, he was the Thing is like sandy.
Oh,
he's like
okay. So this guy's red
sort of
too.
Like a light toned brown. So yeah, this dude is red. Yeah, the conditions are harsh for him. It is extremely hot. 100 degrees Celsius, I believe he had said, is the temperature was.
100 degrees where she was sitting. It was 300 degrees Celsius.
300 degrees Celsius where he was, yeah. So, super duper hot. And she is, not feeling sorry for this schlub of a man who is apparently malfunctioning in this bioengineering experiment that Hephaestus had put into play, because he is starting to have memories of his prior self, and he's forming emotions. He's also believing that he's in contact with another life form, and throughout the thousands of years that Hephaestus has been into play and doing what they do, they have been looking for other life forms, and they haven't found any. So, Kara thinks this dude is just losing his mind, going loopy-doopy. There's a lot of dialogue here between the two of them going back and forth with Sebastian saying that he is more human than she is, and she's a heartless bitch, and we're establishing the fact that she's working for Hephaestus, and she's kind of cold and callous. We're also establishing the fact that she is so hot that she has to open up her little space jacket blouse thingy.
Right, there has to be a little bit of sexiness.
And in between her space breasts, blouse, there is a little locket. And when Sebastian sees this, he asks her what it is. And he has this almost like knowing look on his face. And he's kind of pensive around her this whole time. In the way that he does comment on her cold and callous nature, it's less of an insult and more of an observation. So we have him ask her what this locket is. She opens it up and says that it's a picture of her and her husband. And she's telling him the story of her husband and how he died and how she could have gone to see him during his last moments alive. But instead, she stuck to doing her job and chose that over seeing her husband during his last moments. He asks if she thinks the husband forgives her. She says it doesn't matter. And she's basically using this story to establish the fact that she does not care about Sebastian. And it doesn't matter what happens to him. His job is to mine this planet, get the minerals that the Hephaestus company needs, and meet his monthly quota. If he can't do that, she's going to pull the plug on that specific operation until Sebastian drops dead from a lack of supplies to keep him alive, because Hephaestus supplies them with a sort of liquid nutrient that keeps their bioengineered creations afloat.
Yeah, his looks like motor oil.
Right. And without it, he's going to die. And she's basically telling him, like, he can say all the sad stories he wants about himself getting emotions back and etc. And to her, it's not going to amount to anything because she didn't care about seeing her husband on his last legs. So she's not going to give a crap about Sebastian.
She was putting country before her right. relationships.
Yeah. Basically. And, yeah, it's a strange thing. I think that what, I can't remember his name. I think it was David Letterman that had recently said, you always want to have patriotism and respect your country, but you only want to respect your government if they, deserve it, if they show that they deserve it. And I think that comes into play here for this episode because, you know, her government, Hephaestus, is definitely not deserving of, you know, her patriotism that she's displaying here.
No, I mean, so, respect needs to go both ways, and that's true even,
right.
even at a governmental level.
So, basically what ends up happening here is Sebastian, throughout the episode, can't understand these voices coming to him that he believes are aliens until a moment when he does understand them. And they basically tell him to come to this glowing green rock and they're going to take him away from all of this pain and fix him up and give him a better life. So he tells Kara that this is what he's doing and he doesn't care about Hephaestus. So he puts something in a little, they're separated by this wall, basically, this glass wall. And he puts something in a container to push it through from one side to the other. And he walks away as she's screaming at him. He turns back before he's out of sight and says to her, I did forgive you. And then she's like, what the fuck does that mean? She goes to see what he had sent over to her and finds out that it is the exact same locket that she's wearing. So this is apparently her husband. And she goes to a little vidcom to see where he's going while she's, like, screaming, I'm sorry, please don't leave me, I didn't know it was you. And she starts getting her emotions coming back to her in a wave. But it's too late. When she finds him on the vid screen, he is touching this glowing green rock, and he disappears to spend time with the aliens. And she's left alone, so...
I think it was more heaven than anything else.
All right.
I think it was an afterlife that they were beckoning him to.
So do you think that she deserves to be left alone?
Yeah.
Okay. What do you think about this?
I have no sympathy for her. I think she's the monster.
Yeah, I think you're right. So, what would you give the monster for this? And by saying that, I want to know what you think about the crag-looking motherfucker, Sebastian.
Oh, you want to know what I think of the monster-looking guy.
Right.
I liked him.
You did?
Yeah, maybe it's something about the fact that he looks like one of those unconventional superheroes.
Yeah, he has, the special effects are pretty decent for, like, a television show. He's got some special effects that remind me of some of the creatures, like the demons in Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Oh, see, I felt like he was one of those, like, gentle, loving giants.
Okay.
Like, Groot.
Okay. Yeah, he was alright looking. I'd give him a 2, 0.5. I think he was serviceable for the episode.
Oh, I'd give him a 3.5.
Okay.
Yeah, I thought they did a pretty good job with his costume.
So, obviously this one is not scary. It's more of an introspective kind of thing. And I don't think it would work as a movie because it's just this, like, vignette with a little message to, you know, watch your humanity, because that comes before, you know, your jobs.
Yeah, I mean, I think in the right hands it could become a movie, but I don't know that it would be an easy
one. I think the message here is don't let your work consume you.
Right. It's definitely sending the message that there are some things more important than your job.
Yeah, definitely. So what would you say the episode rating here is?
I would give this one a solid 3.5.
All right. I'm going to give this one a 1.5. I didn't think it was bad. I liked the message in it. However, I think that there was not enough going on to keep me extremely excited. I would have liked to have had some more to it. So just some more horror aspects to it. This was definitely something that belonged more on an Outer Limits episode. There's quite a few space episodes and aliens in this series. I'm going to take this monster more as a monster of humanity. And, yeah, I mean,
see, and it wasn't this is
definitely
packed,
this is definitely more like Outer Limits stuff. This is where that belongs.
Yeah, it wasn't action-packed, but I thought there was a horror aspect to it. Like, I mean, this is stuff that humans do to each other.
Sure. So
it's kind of like the darker side of humanity that they were exposing there.
I can see that. I'm going to throw at you guys another media option. We've got Class of 1999, which was a movie done in 1990. This is an action horror sci-fi. It's pretty ridiculous. It's got cyborgs in it, and they're basically teachers that are secretly planted in these schools that are overrun with gangs. This is like a coming of the future kind of thing, and this movie did have a sequel that's more future oriented. But yeah, so gangs kind of rule in the school, and these cyborg teachers are put into play to teach these kids a lesson, and the kids have to sort of rise up against their teachers and knock them out. So, you know, if you ever wanted to kill your teacher, this is a good movie to watch and kind of mystify yourself with, because it's a pretty fun action horror movie, and it has Malcolm McDowell in it, so you're getting that, and that's pretty fun. We're gonna move on to our next episode of Monsters.
I feel like I need to clarify that I'm not laughing at killing the teachers. I'm laughing because our animals have chosen this exact moment to get very frisky and playful.
Yeah, basically, cats jumping in a box to escape the dog who is chasing her around. So our next episode is episode 6 of season 3. This one's titled The Hole.
The Hole.
Yeah, The Hole.
Not a sexy hole.
You have more holes than I do. But this episode didn't have too many. I feel like it was a pretty solid episode.
Yeah, this episode is really good.
Mm-hmm.
And there they go.
So our director here is David Saravide. Our writers are Haskell Barkin, Wayne Berwick. And our stars are Ahmad Rashad, Anton Pagan, Glenn Kabuta, Mitchell McCormick, and a slew of other dudes, including Ray Boom Boom Mancini. Most
Why
of these people
sound familiar.
Most of these people are you're thinking of like probably Don Mancini.
Maybe
we're getting a lot of these actors in here playing zombies mostly. And they're all getting credited for it, which is pretty cool.
Spoiler alert, this is a zombie episode.
Sort of. Not really, though. They title them as zombies here on IMDb, but they're more like ghosts.
No, they're the undead.
So,
it's this their skeletons one, and their bodies moving.
This one aired November 4th of 1990, and I'm going to let Cake Bitch kick this one off and cover it the way through. So, have at it.
So, this episode covers three gentlemen as they explore one of the tunnels in Vietnam. I don't know enough about history, but I think it's the Viet Cong that dug yes, all the tunnels.
That is exactly
it?
What it is.
Okay. So, starts off with Kenner, I think it's his name, throwing mm-hmm. a grenade in the hole, screaming fire in the hole, and something about Charlie, because I think that's what they called them then.
Yeah.
And as soon as the explosion goes off, the three men jump down inside, and they are going to be looking for any of the wounded that are still alive in this so they can interrogate them.
Yes.
The guy from the Bronx, what was his name again?
We basically got dude from the Bronx, Italian dude, and Vietnamese guy.
Yeah.
So.
Okay. Are they both from the Bronx? I thought the Italian guy was from the Bronx.
Okay.
Anyway, I know Kenner is the guy who initially drops the grenade. So I will just refer to the other guy as Bronx guy and the Vietnamese.
Sure.
So they're exploring this tunnel. There's lots of creepy crawly things down there. The ground's kind of shifting along the way. And a rat runs across the Bronx guy's hand. And they're exploring this tunnel, and they finally find the command center in this tunnel. And guns and supplies, weapons, you know, everything that you could possibly need to wage a war underground. And they're very confused as to why everything is just, like, left behind. They think it's weird that maybe they've been set up. And then all of a sudden they hear this groan behind a piece of fabric. And they move it, and it's one of the wounded. It's looking pretty rough.
Yeah, pretty gnarly looking dude. He looks like he was attacked by a fucking werewolf. Like, massive gashes all over his body, especially his face.
See, immediately I thought, man, that is a zombie.
Oh, okay. I thought this was going to be a werewolf thing.
Nope, nope, nope. It looked like a zombie. So, this zombie is speaking with the other Vietnamese guy, because, you know, they speak the same language, and this guy's gonna translate later. He tries to tell the guys that the zombie's just delirious and not making sense, but the two Americans push him, and he confesses that the zombie said that they dug their tunnels too deep and that they disturbed something evil, and that the dead are buried in the wall and the tunnels won't let them escape, and he thinks that maybe Earth is avenging all the blood spilled
right.
on the surface.
Very superstitious.
So they immediately are like, maybe we should get out of here. And they try to backtrack. Bronx guy hears a screamy kind of noise.
Well, they want to get out of there, the two dudes. But their leader doesn't want to go. He thinks that they don't deserve to get paid since they only did half the job.
Oh,
so,
that's right. He does want to keep
He's like, her. Look, we're not leaving. We're actually going to go deeper into this motherfucker and find these dudes and interrogate them.
Yeah, so guy from the Bronx hears a screamy noise and he follows it and he almost trips a grenade that was tied to the wall.
Yeah.
Thankfully, he catches it in time and he backs off and backs into a wall. And then there are zombie hands coming out of the wall.
Yeah.
Grasping at him all over. And till Kenner gets back to him, the zombies are gone because the Bronx guy had shot at them and they're back in the walls. And he tells the guy that he just has a bad case of tunnelitis and come on, maybe we should get out of here.
Tunnelitis.
So on the way back, they hear more groaning.
Tunnelitis sounds pretty legit, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. On their way back, they hear more groaning, and they leave the Vietnamese guy behind to investigate, it seems like. Mm-hmm. Is that?
Yeah.
Was I interpreting that right?
Mm-hmm.
And the zombies attack him and, like, literally rip his throat open with their talons. And the two Americans come back in. They're trying to shoot these zombies, but we all know that shooting zombies doesn't work.
Well, you shoot them in the head, which they...
This wasn't even working in the head, though.
I mean, that's why these are not zombies. These are vengeful spirits.
And this just taking the form of skeletons.
Take the form of skeletons. All right. Correct.
Well, okay. So it's like a hard, fast rule that even though their brains aren't working, shooting them in the head kills them.
For zombies, typically, yes. For vengeful spirits, you're probably going to need a priest or find the reason why they haven't moved on and help them do so. Well, or the just fucking die, because most vengeful Bronx spirits aren't going to abide by there, too so many rules.
Apparently God can't save you from these guys. Anyway, so the shooting doesn't work, and they curtail it out of there. They try to find their way out of this tunnel, and they think that they're following the markers that the guy from the Bronx left behind. And at one point, the guy from the Bronx is like, I don't remember this turn, but there's a marker there. So the other guy, Kenner, is just like, well, we gotta be on the right track, so let's just keep moving.
Yeah.
Finally, like, they just take so many turns. They're not getting anywhere. They have no idea what time it is. And the guy from the Bronx just gives up.
Yeah.
And he's like, we're gonna die here. The tunnel won't let us escape. And Kenner's like, no, we can't be more than a few feet underground. Let's dig our way out. And the Bronx guy kind of just sits there, like, crying.
Yeah,
praying.
He's losing his mind.
He's done. He's done for.
He's got tunnelitis.
Yeah. Finally, Kenner thinks he sees daylight, and the zombies make a sudden appearance and drag the guy from the Bronx away. Kenner makes a few sad attempts at getting his friend back, but he's like, fuck this, I'm just gonna pull myself out to safety. Right. And when he pulls himself up through the hole, a zombie grabs his leg, and he has to, like, yank himself away. Mm-hmm. He gets through the hole, and he's back in command center.
Yeah, he's basically back where they started. Yep. So he's still in the fucking tunnels, and the Viet Cong guy, who is there at the beginning, kind of warning them of what's going on. He's there again, mm-hmm, with his gashed up face, but he looks a little bit more deadified, and he's coming at the dude, and then the ones from below are still coming up after him. They pull him back down. He's pretty fucked.
Yeah.
So there is no fucking escaping this bitch.
They do. They pull him into the ground, so now he's one of the dead bodies.
Yeah, this is true nightmare logic right here. It's a very cool episode. It has some really solid pairing with synth music throughout, which is not something that has been put into play for any of these monsters episodes as yet. But the synth music makes a really good addition to this straight-up horror episode following Nightmare Logic.
I like that they actually took something that was a nightmare, literal nightmare, like, that people lived through.
Yeah.
And turned it into a horror episode.
Sure. I mean, as far as we know, those three soldiers, you know, could have been dead for years, and that we're just getting a glimpse of the thing that they have to repeat every day, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's very creepy.
It was pretty cool.
I liked it a lot. I think it was a more one of the more scarier ones. And I think the monsters themselves, the vengeful spirits, or whatever you want to call them, I think that they're vengeful spirits myself, and I think they look really good. They're skeletal. They are, like, highly ragged skeletons with bits of humanity still sticking to them, and they look strong. I'm going to give those monsters a 4. I think they look badass.
I'll give them a 3.5.
And they're coming out of the fucking walls in these Viet Cong holes. It's creepy as shit. So yeah, you don't know how many of them there are. They say there's like hundreds down there. So yeah, creepy shit.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing.
Really like it. I think this could work as a movie. I think you could expand it very easily, just by kind of showing more about the setting of this war. And the lives of these soldiers before they go into these holes, and make it kind of like an escape film.
Yeah, Sylvester Stallone would be in it.
Yeah, kind of like how The Descent was, but you're putting some vengeful spirits in there in place of Schmeagle monsters. yeah, so as for other media, where I'm going to take you for a vengeful supernatural spirit kind of monster, there's a movie I like called Mama from 2013, and it's a fun one. It stars Jessica Chastain. She gets two girls that are feral children raised by a ghost in the woods that had lost its own child, so kind of takes on these two children as her own. And ghosts apparently aren't very good at raising kids because these two girls end up very feral, like beasts. They can't really speak because they've gone too long without the human language hitting their ear holes. But it's very fun.
So I guess ghosts don't talk.
Yeah. So Mama, the weird Mama spirit, comes back after him. And this woman Jessica Chastain plays and her husband have to save these two girls from Mama Spirit. And it's fun. It's a really serviceable movie, I think. It's definitely not terrifying. It's more like visual effects, jaw-dropping kind of thing, and some really cool visual effects, I would say. The monster itself has a really cool appearance to it and some interesting powers with moths and stuff. So check that out.
Mothra.
Yeah, check that out. I liked it a lot.
I was going to say also go see Happy Death Day because it's kind of that continuous loop that he was stuck in. Never being able to leave the tunnel.
Yeah, that's possible that was a thing. Happy Death Day I want to cover on our show sometime. I really like that movie.
That's great.
So far, it's my favorite movie of 2017.
Really? Beat Get Out?
Yeah, I think it beats Get Out. That's me. I mean, I like movies like Happy Death Day. They're my kind of jam. Yeah. So that's just hitting my high notes there. So episode rating for this one, the whole... it's not a butthole. It's a good hole. It's a happy hole. I'm going to give it...
It's not a happy hole.
I'm going to give it a... I'm going to give it a 3.5. I think it was good.
Really?
Yeah, I liked it.
No, I'm actually going to give it a 5. Okay. Yeah, I thought this one was really well made, and the acting was actually pretty good in it, too, which you don't always get, like, in The Outpost. The acting wasn't great in that one. Well, yeah. I mean... The thing guy was pretty good, but she wasn't very convincing.
I would have liked this one a lot more if there was more of a fight against these spirits. If they were, like, stabbing them with knives, shooting them with guns more, showing some pieces of them blow off using grenades, showing the monsters, you know, scratch them up more. We did see one of the monsters with its skeletal hand dig its nails into a dude's leg and pull some flesh out. Another one bit onto a dude's neck and blood squirted out of his neck.
Fingers. I thought it was his nails.
I would have liked to have seen more of that kind of stuff. Well, and then would have elevated it.
It was also on television. So
right, yeah.
There's only so much they could do.
I want more action for something like that. I thought that could be really fun.
The kid from the Bronx was pretty convincing because he was just losing his mind. Yeah. And that would definitely... At some point, that would be someone's reaction.
So what's the lesson for this guy?
Well, I think it was an anti-war episode.
Yeah.
'Cause the Vietnam War was unwinnable. It was a very unpopular war. A lot of the veterans came back and weren't respected because they thought, like, they shouldn't have even been there in the first place. Sorry, I'm having a hard time being loud enough. So I think that in the 80s, it was finally coming back around that the Vietnam veterans were being more respected. So I think this was kind of a shout out to them and the horrors they lived through. But it was definitely like anti-war because the earth was rebelling against all the bloodshed.
Yeah. Yeah, very cool.
Where the evil spirits were.
Very cool one. I think I would suggest this one to you guys. I think you should watch that one, definitely. So we're going to be closing this bad boy out for today. Join us tomorrow for some more episodes of Monsters. And do you have any final thoughts, Cake Bitch?
I do not.
All right, closing it out with the intro to Monsters. Have a great night.
something on.
Oh!
Oh, great! It's Monsters, our favorite show!
Shh! It's starting.